taken by Liam Gordon. Here's Archer. Right in there for Wayne. Missed at the near post, but in! And for Valley! And he's only gone and done it again. Ben Wayne, whose goal took them through against Bristol City on Tuesday. The big Newcastle fan has scored against Sunderland. And here's the big shock on here.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFerlin.
Hello.
Yeah, after a busy FA Cup weekend, I watched loads of football over the weekend. My Saturday was just rock solid football and I loved it. And it was football I didn't even have to leave the house for, so it was very, very lazy football. Of course, I wasn't allowed to do that on Sunday as well because my wife thinks that sitting in front of the telly watching football all weekend is not good for me, and the fact that I should be mobile. But hey, I had lots of fun. Terry, did you watch a load of football over the weekend?
I watched the Cologne-Dortmund game.
Oh,
that was good. That was a feisty football match. It's quite good. But I had a sort of like similar weekend to yours, only in reverse. Saturday, I spent most of my Saturday being active. And not being in the house. And then yesterday I watched a little bit, sort of browsed, sort of grazed across the FA Cup and the doings in the FA Cup. So I don't think I was as glued to the set as it sounds like you were, but nevertheless, I was, you know, I tried to stay across the doings.
Well, I did manage to grab bits of the football on Sunday, but I guess, Jan, you were a bit more invested in it, weren't you?
I was invested in one particular game, yes.
Yes.
Which turned out to be a terrible game. In the preview, I suggested that there were three big banana skin games in this round. So Arsenal need to overcome Mansfield, which they did.
Yep, just about.
Chelsea needed to overcome Wrexham, which they did.
Just about.
And Sunderland needed to overcome Port Vale, which they didn't.
Ah, yes.
So the lowest ranked team in the competition knocked out two times winners, Sunderland, and thoroughly deserved it. It became quite obvious to me that I think that the team didn't have their eye on the ball. In some cases, quite literally, just before the goal, Luke O'Nine found himself under a little bit of pressure just inside of his own half. And for reasons best known to Luke O'Nine, he decided to pass the ball back to the goalkeeper in a looping fashion where the goalkeeper wasn't. So poor old Elberg had to go sprinting back, realising, and quite quick thinking on his behalf actually, that he couldn't handle the ball whatsoever. It was going in the goal. It was about to cross the line, and he leapt acrobatically and headed the ball clear. And that actually led to a couple of subsequent corners, of which Port Vale scored. So that was great. And then just to rub salt into the wound, Ben Wayne, who was the hero of the last round as well for Port Vale, whose mother, I believe, is from Newcastle, decided to run right across where all the Sunderland fans were with his hand held aloft a la Alan Shearer, just to really rub it in. So thank you for that, Ben Wayne. It really added to my misery, and that continued for the rest of the day. I stopped watching football at that point for the reasons I've just gone through.
Right, fine. So we won't talk about any football that happened after that. Okay.
Yeah.
That was it. That was your Port Vale of tears, Giannis. It's a shame there wasn't a snooker tournament on, which you could have retreated to, which is what I did after the Macclesfield. It coincided with the first day of the Masters, and I said, so I just like put that on for the entire week afterwards. that was the extent of my trauma. I'm just going to watch the snooker. I think I'm just going to watch the snooker for this week. I think I shall check out football. It's rough, but I mean, it was a changed side. Now, I mean, the fact that Luke O'Nien started tells you something.
Well, he started against
God bless him and all, but.
Yeah. He started against Leeds during the week and did very, very well. I mean, he tends to do quite well, even at this level. Yeah, I mean, it's not his fault, you know, that the whole team lost. So, no, we didn't really have much of a change team. Xhaka wasn't playing because he's coming back from an injury, so they're easing him back in. And Rufus, who's our main keeper, was injured, so Elberg was in. He was also in against Leeds, which was a fine performance and a great win that more or less guaranteed us safety in the Premier League. So that anxiety was dealt with during the week, and then my anxiety moved on to we're going to get knocked out by a team we were playing only a few years ago. So now in my mind that manifested itself, so my anxiety is going to be even more double next time this happens.
Worth just adding, just from the Port Vale point of view, believe it or not, for some reason I end up watching Port Vale on the telly a couple of times earlier in the season. They, I guess, probably had a Monday game or something like that when Darren Moore was their coach, and they were, I mean, they still are rubbish, but when they were really just awful. And their kit is magnificent. I thought their kit was magnificent, and it's a throwback because it's their 150th anniversary this season. So it's a celebration of their 150th anniversary. I don't think it's 150 years old, that kit design. I just think that they just thought, well, that's quite a cool kit, we'll just do that. Although it's obviously, it was sad for you, Yanis, but you know, from a Magic of the Cup, Romance of Football, Isn't Football Great point of view, it is a nice story that Port Vale are having their moment in this season. I don't think it's going to stop them from getting relegated, but it is still a wonderful moment, I think, in a club that very few people ever really think about, let's be honest. The other Potteries club that's always kind of been lower division. Stanley Matthews was their coach for a while, and that's pretty much it, right? Mm.
Of course, there was some extra magic in the FA Cup, though, wasn't there, this weekend? Because VAR was sprinkled all over the round. We actually gave you a little bit of duff advice last week, listeners, because we said that it wasn't going to be at the non-Premier League grounds. But there it was. I was surprised to see it during the Arsenal game at Mansfield. They said, we're going to check that with VAR. And I thought, wow, it's ready to be spread out amongst the whole of the pyramid now, isn't it? If it can get to Mansfield, it can go to Port Vale. And of course, it was used quite a lot in the game at Wrexham as well. So did it make it even more magical, Terry?
No. Thinking about it back and thinking, well, of course, yes. So obviously Wrexham are going to have the camera points ready, aren't they? Because like they literally film documentaries in that place is wired for TV. There was some controversy and that and VAR nonsense going on. Unfortunately, you know, it just reversed the whole sort of like narrative that I managed to spin in the final minutes of the last week's podcast, which I'm deeply sorry about, because I am always looking for ways to make Wrexham more obnoxious than they are. And hats off to Gary Andrews for his preview, by the way, which I thought was also a nice anti-Wrexham antidote. Is that something that we should be thinking about here, though? Does that mean that VAR is coming to the EFL? Or, I mean, are we just assuming that somebody was able to pay for... Yeah, particularly for Mansfield and Port Vale. I mean, like, who paid for that?
Well, yeah, indeed. And does that come out of the prize money? Because
well, that's it.
I'm sure Mansfield would have just preferred the cash, please.
But that's exactly what's on my mind. Is that did the club pay for VAR to be installed into that? Or was it something that the competition, the FA, were able to do? Because, yeah, if that eats into the prize money, then that's not fair, I would say.
On Saturday, I was actually double screening. I had the Arsenal game on and I had the Lionesses match on against Iceland, their World Cup qualifier. And that was at the City Ground, where they didn't have VAR, but they did have goal line technology. Yeah, of course, they wouldn't have had goal line tech at Mansfield or Port Vale. So, yeah, I just thought that was weird about how different tech is being used or not used. Yeah, it was called in for a couple of incidents in the Wrexham game. If it hadn't been there, would the result have changed? Yeah, actually, I think it would have done. I think it would have gone to penalties, I think, at least.
Something occurred to me about Wrexham's disallowed offside goal.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about last week for Wenger's law.
Yeah.
If I'm right in thinking, then, under Wenger's law, that goal stands.
Yep, definitely. Definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering whether we're happy with that, that's all. But it's something to think. I'm not asking for an answer. It's a rhetorical question. You know, are we happy with that? But that is a good example of Wenger's law.
Yeah, you know? It is. Yeah, that one right at the end, that would totally have been one. And for the reasons of the fact that in the old days, you could have said they were level. Those guys were level. And the player was playing to be level. And you could see he had a great view across the line, and it's just wherever your feet are. But from the start of the next Canadian Premier League season, you'll be able to see it for yourself when they start using the new rule there. I don't think they're going to go with it. Just don't think they will. It's not going to change anything because, obviously, it's VAR in England, and we always get VAR wrong in England, don't we? Wouldn't it be better if it was more like what it is in Germany, where it works perfectly all the time? So perfectly, they've put it in the top two divisions, haven't they, already?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and it is loved and respected by all the fans universally. They occasionally throw tennis balls onto the stadium to interrupt games. These aren't balls that are, you know, they're against anything. They're just simply balls, and written on them, they've got "We love VAR" on them. And it's lovely. And the game stops for about 10 minutes or so while, you know, the volunteers go out there and collect them all up, and they go, yeah. And they sort of like, they love VAR, love VAR, love VAR. In German, obviously.
Obviously,
you know,
yeah.
That's what Scheiße means in German. It means love.
Yes.
As we all know.
Yeah, but, yeah. Obviously, yeah. Yes. Yeah,
absolutely. We might be joking here. So in the German second division, last week in the game between Hertha BSC and Preußen Münster, a Münster fan was able to sneakily find his way to the back of the big VAR screen when I think they were looking at a penalty decision, I think. So the VAR said, go over and check out this penalty, dude. And so he went over. And a Preußen Münster fan snuck out and pulled the plug from the back of the TV screen. And the screen went blank. And he couldn't look at it. And rather than trying to figure out whether it was plugged in, they didn't do anything. So in the end, the VAR, I'd say, well, look, that was a penalty. So just give a penalty. Which, I mean, like, it's like, well, hang on a minute. Like, surely the on-field referee should be the decider of this. And that in itself is precedent enough. It's like the VAR said, yeah, that was a penalty, so you'll just have to give it. And it's like, well, hang on a second. I didn't see the penalty, and I can't see it here, so I can't give a penalty. Anyway, obviously because there was foul play involved. And also the Preußen Münster coincided it with an anti-VAR banner that they put up as well. So they must have been ready for a potential moment. So it sounds like it was a coordinated attack. Preußen Münster have gone, oh, this is terrible. We'll find out who's responsible. And what? Do what? Do what? Were you going to chuck him in jail for pulling a plug out of the back of a telly? I mean, come on. You know, get real, guys. It's just football. It's so much. Like, this is so serious that we're going to pursue people for, like, a prank. What is really a harmless prank, to be perfectly honest with you. I know football is very important. I do appreciate that, but it's still, come on. So that was quite funny. So yeah, generally speaking, VAR is not liked, I think, anywhere where it's implemented. I don't think there's a single fan base that likes it. Well, I think that's really cool, and I'd like to see it in England. Although in England, can you imagine? It would just be like, they would throw people in jail for that shit in England. But there's way too many high-vis guys around to stop that from happening, I think.
It's funny you should say that, but in the last couple of games at the Tottenham Stadium, there has been technical issues with the mics. And I think it's happened in two games now where there have been delays caused by the referees not being able to hear each other. It happened in the Arsenal game. There were lengthy delays in the Arsenal game. Now, the referee at the time had ref cam on him. He also had his speaker set to talk to his linos as well. He probably has got a mic that is tied in with the stadium PA as well, so he's got that. It's no wonder something's going wrong. But do you think, however, Jan, that someone pulled the plug on him? Do you think there is some impish Tottenham fan that is trying to help his team out as much as he can?
Well, I don't think they'd even get that right, would they? I welcome sabotage of technology in football. Absolutely well pleased that that's happened in Germany, and I think I've got a new favourite German club. I mean, it's interesting what you said there, Terry, that VAR is unpopular nearly everywhere it's been implemented, yet we still have it.
Which
is quite sad, really, when the majority, I would say, is it the majority or are there ne'er-do-wells who think that actually it is a good idea?
It's probably liked at City, isn't it? Man City strike me as the kind of fan base that would like VAR. And
Chelsea
like,
definitely do.
Chelsea would definitely, because they're a really awful football
club.
Really awful football club. And I imagine Red Bull fans probably as well. I reckon Red Bull probably. Yeah. I probably love VAR.
Yeah.
The Norwegian Premier League, the Eliteserien, voted to end VAR. And they were cut across by their own FA, who said, well, no, we'll change the vote. And this time the vote has to be ratified by the entirety of the FA, all the other clubs. All the other clubs in the FA have to ratify it too. Even the ones, especially the ones who don't have VAR. And of course, it's only used in the top division.
Yeah.
And they all, for various reasons, agreed that VAR should stay.
Mm.
If I was Jan, you know, if I was a little bit further north of the country than where I am now, and I was a little bit more handsome, I suppose, I would probably be saying at this point, there's a conspiracy going on here, lads. But I feel that there's money involved in VAR. Yeah. I think that that's what we can say about it.
Yeah, I think that there is a very powerful lobby for VAR. And I think especially with UEFA, and I think that lobby is enough to put pressure on local FAs to make sure that you don't step out of line. Look at what happened when Wolves wanted a vote in the Premier League about it. It was barely discussed. They did have a vote, and it was 19-1. They were the only team that voted against VAR. It's a miracle that it actually got to a vote, I think, in that respect. But there is never any voice of dissent amongst people who actually make decisions about VAR. None at all. It is here because there are powerful, wealthy people who want it there. And I don't think that is conspiratorial chat. That's just a fact of life about the way things are. Sony will say that they've been pouring money into football for years, and they have been. They think their PlayStation sponsors the Champions League to the tune of £50 million a year. So that's a lot of investment into football, and I think they want to make sure that they're getting some of that investment back again. But they did get the mics back on for the referee in the game between Palace and Spurs. And it was good, wasn't it, Terry? Because you wouldn't have wanted that to be abandoned because the referee's mics weren't working.
No, that would have been deeply troubling and annoying and downright suspicious. So that would have been, let's check the betting patterns here, guys, if that had happened. Yeah, because obviously it is a game that Crystal Palace won, as everyone knows. Footballing world knows that Palace won that game. Not because Palace won it, but because Tottenham lost it. They not just lost the game, they just lost it. That club has just lost it. I think we saw that at halftime during the game when, en masse, you know, a visibly large number of Tottenham fans getting up and walking out of the stadium. And I don't believe they were going for a slash. I don't think they were, or they were going for a slash. They were going for the slash at home or in the pub around the corner or a bit further on or closer there. They're thinking, bloody hell, it's a Thursday night. What am I doing here? I literally have better places to be than here. And I have to say, I don't blame them because I think it's easy and fun to criticise Tottenham fans for perhaps having a sense of entitlement that isn't worthy. But at the same time, it's one of the most expensive stadiums to buy a ticket in. And they have been promised a lot consistently for a number of years now. And the Europa League aside, what they've got is utter dross and relegation peril. They would have had it last year if it weren't for the bottom three being so poor, and they're in it now. They're in it up to their neck. And yeah, you can kind of understand why they think, well, you know what, you know, it wouldn't have been orchestrated, but it is clearly a statement that that club is really is in deep, deep trouble, because it's going to be very difficult. They're going to, for the fans to turn around unless there's a massive improvement on the field. Yeah, it's grim times.
And Igor Tudor as well, there are calls from the fans that he has to go only three games in. It gives the real impression of a club imploding in on itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. You've got to look at it now. Because of the results in that midweek round of fixtures, it's now gone to that 18th place, that last relegation place. There are three teams within 1 point of each other now. You've got West Ham that are currently in there on goal difference on 28 points, minus 19 goal difference. Just above them is Forest, who got that amazing draw at the Etihad. They're on 28 points as well, minus 15 goal difference. And then 1 point above them is Tottenham. But when you look on the form table for the last 10 games, and considering that there is now only, what, 9 games left of the season, in the last 10 games, Tottenham have got 3 points. 3 points from 10 games. Forest in that time have got 10 points. West Ham have got 14 points in that time. So if that form continues, Tottenham aren't just going to be down. They're going to be down by about half a dozen points.
Yeah, it does feel like, the numbers play themselves out, don't they? Forest and West Ham, especially West Ham. I mean, I saw them at the London Stadium where they beat Sunderland and they looked like a decent outfit. It's like Sunderland went there and just gave in. I mean, they were playing well and they've continued to do so. So it's them really that I think is going to drag Tottenham into it, which is, you know, it's quite seismic. If Tottenham went down, I mean, that's going to be one of the biggest upsets or biggest moments in top-level English football history. I mean, I heard someone the other day saying that it would be as big as Leicester winning the league. I'm not quite sure if it's on the same level as that, but it's not far off, is it, fellas?
No, it's not that far.
It's seismic, isn't it?
Yeah. We've seen big clubs go down before, and everyone thinking, no, they're not going to go down. They're too good to go down. And they're thinking most recently Newcastle and Villa, and before that, Forest, I'd say, as well. But when they went down, they were pretty poor. But I suppose Tottenham are as well. So it is likely, isn't it, that this could actually happen?
I don't think anyone is saying Tottenham are too good to go down.
No.
I think in those other examples that you've mentioned, I think people were saying in all candor, they were obviously, they were wrong.
Yeah.
But I think they were reasonable to have the opinion that that team was too good to go down. I think maybe about Villa, the Villa were pretty terrible.
Mm.
But I think it was very difficult. It's a long, long time ago, but Clough's final season as a manager was to oversee their relegation.
Yeah.
And that team wasn't that bad. I've got to say, I mean, they did play pretty terribly. But this feels like this has been something that's been coming for so long now, and that there's been any attempt to arrest this decline just seems to have, if anything, seems to have accelerated it. You know, it's the brakes, guys, not the accelerator. Hit the brakes. You know, when you're watching a team and, you know, you're in a commanding position in the game, and Jan probably identifies this a little bit better, but if we've all experienced this, really. We've got a 3-0 lead or a 3-1 lead. We've got, there's a clear 2-goal lead, but you're still a bit worried or very worried. You think, oh, we're going to blow this. We're going to blow this, right? Think about Jan's Premier League experience of, like, we're still going to get relegated, even though they're only 3 points off Europa League qualification or something like that when we get to the end of the season. That anxiety was completely absent for me watching that game. First 10 minutes of the second half, Palace, I think, let Tottenham back in there, and that created a degree of anxiety. But once that passed, I just thought, well, I don't know. I mean, they could go off and get a cup of tea and still probably come back on the pitch 10 minutes later and it'd still be the same scoreline because they were just that inept. It's hard to see who's going to come and save these guys.
Yeah.
The only people who can save them is just the teams below them just suddenly turn rubbish. But you look at the direction of travel of West Ham and think, that's not locked in.
Yeah.
You would think that West Ham could get out of this. And so it's going to be Forest or Spurs.
Mm. And if you look at the upcoming fixtures as well, so this week they're away to Atletico Madrid. And then they've got 5 days later, Liverpool away, and then they're back in action entertaining Atletico Madrid. And then they've got to go and try and beat Forest. That is a set of fixtures that's just going to... It's just not what you want at this time. So it's just... This is almost... It's like becoming a perfect storm, isn't it? And it's very, very entertaining.
That Tottenham Forest, that Forest game's going to be amazing.
Yep.
It's
going to be the worst game of football we've ever seen in our lives. And we have seen Whiteleaf pre-liquidation Whiteleaf. we have seen Whiteleaf before the 3G pitch play, and this is going to be worse than that.
Whoa, ouch. 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 That's damning words there from Terry. However, I think there is a glimmer of hope for Tottenham. At the moment, the bookmakers say that they are just as likely as West Ham. It's between them and West Ham to go down. That's what the bookmakers are saying. They're both 6-4. But I think Tottenham are just going to gravitate towards that 18th place and they're just going to stay there. And come the end of the season, it's going to be pretty much disastrous. However, I can see a glimmer, and the glimmer is those 115 charges. I think the Premier League, they quite like Tottenham, and I don't think they want to see them go down, and I don't think they want to see City and Tottenham go down. So I think what would happen is they'll say, right, we'll give you 60-point deduction, Man City, or whatever it takes to cut you below Tottenham. Tottenham get reprieve from relegation and City go down instead. Jan, what would you rather see? Would you rather see Tottenham go down or City go down?
Oh my God, Graham, that is that is a tough one, mate. Well, it's become part of my life now, watching Tottenham fall down the table and potentially out of the league. But, you know, Man City are cheats. And speaking to some people that I know that support them, just seem to be like, well, no, it's fine. Nothing will happen to us because we've got deep pockets, and we'll just drag it through appeal after appeal after appeal. And it's that kind of attitude I want to see punished. So I think I would go for, I'll wait till next season for Spurs to go down, because it's going to happen, right? And City can have it this season. That's what I'd go with.
Yes. Terry, Sporting Integrity says that the team that finished 18th should go down, but Sporting Integrity is nothing that City have been interested in over the years, have they?
No, indeed. But then that's because they're cheats.
They are cheats, yes.
They have cheated. And all we're waiting for is the punishment for their cheating. And I would suggest that a justifiable punishment for their widespread cheating is relegation. Yeah, demotion into the league below. I still don't feel that's going to happen. I've got to be honest. I just don't think they've got the guts for it. But you raise an interesting question here, because if they were compelled to make the decision this season about City, and my feeling is that they will contrive a way of waiting to find out whether Tottenham get relegated first before they do anything, then then it puts them in a very difficult position, because they'll go, well, we're in a perilous position here. Which would they rather see go down? I think that the collective decision amongst the people who make these, you know, people in charge, and I'd say if it was up to the Premier League, I wonder whether or not they'd rather City go down. I don't think Tottenham cause the Premier League the kind of problems that City do. I think City, obviously, they see themselves as being disruptors, but they have come in, they've spent a lot of money, they've upset the status quo. All the things that City fans say that they are hated for is kind of true, because they were a club that was sort of, you know, they were City, right? I mean, people used to sort of like City. They used to be kind of unofficial second clubs for a lot of people, but then they got moneyed and they've come through, and they've overspent massively and they've cheated. But I think that if they had a choice, they think, well, actually, these guys from Abu Dhabi could leave, you know, they could withdraw their investment. That doesn't mean that the City would, I don't mean completely, but they could certainly scale back on an awful lot of investment. And I don't know whether City have kind of got that wherewithal to sustain themselves at that level in the way that Tottenham do. Tottenham are, we've talked about this very recently. I mean, it's worth saying they're one of the richest, financially most successful football clubs in the world. And in that respect, more so than City. I think that there's that history, an embedded history and record of people who have supported this club all over the world and bring in an awful lot of money. I think that they would financially prefer to see Tottenham stay up, given the choice. So maybe they might think, well, look, do you know what? There's a chance here. Kill one of our enemies and save one of our friends.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you do? I know what I'd do.
Well, I know what I'd do. I'm an Arsenal fan, and I would say send City down. That's what I'd do. Yeah.
You don't want Tottenham in the Championship. I mean, like, your rivals. I don't want Brighton to be relegated. I would prefer them to be in the same division that we're in. I only want them to go down with us. I want to drag them down with us. Sorry. All right, maybe for one season it might be worth the novelty of seeing them down a little. But I mean, like my Dortmund hat. I mean, the Revere Derby missing from the Bundesliga is a problem. It's just a problem. It shouldn't, and it's going to be decades, I think, well, years before it's back to its former glory, because even if Schalke go up today, you know, or this season, they're going to struggle against the top three Dortmund side. I don't think that's what you want. I don't think it's what the North London Derby, it cheapens the North London Derby and it cheapens the Premier League.
Mm.
I appreciate that. Obviously, there's the Manchester Derby, but I think we'll live.
Yeah,
you know,
I think we'll live. I think we'll live.
And they're cheats.
They are cheats. I think as well, I just love the fact that if Tottenham manage to stay up on some really, really flaky reprieve, just to see City go down, which would be great for the game, but also it would be great for the fans, because the fans would get it every week for years. Years. Yes. That they've stolen a place in the top flight, that they don't deserve to be there. And that warms my heart. It really does.
So yeah, you see now. See, this for me is the essence of true hatred. It's like, yeah, you can stay, but because we allow it. That is,
oh,
this. Yeah, no, that's domination. Yeah, they see, yeah, it's much bigger smile on your face when you think about that, as opposed to them being relegated. Much bigger. Don't Tottenham have relegation beef from years ago?
Oh God, Gwen? Yes,
they do, don't they? Well, tell us about that. I can't remember what it is.
They were relegated at the end of the 1915 season, the 14-15 season. When football started again in 1919, the Football League had a vote to see who would be in the first division, and Arsenal were voted in and Tottenham were relegated. They were relegated because they finished bottom of the old first division, but the first division was expanded by two teams. So Tottenham went down, I think Chelsea went down as well, and Arsenal went up.
So not only did Arsenal park their tanks on Tottenham's lawns by relocating from Woolwich to Highbury and Islington.
Yeah.
But they then also contrived to get them relegated as well.
Yeah. There were loads of stories. The stories of the owner of Arsenal bribing the members of the Football League. But essentially, they didn't need to. They liked Arsenal. They didn't like Tottenham. And that was the end of it, really.
So there's a possibility of some retribution there. Maybe some kind of retribution for Tottenham if that was to happen.
But still, yeah. 108-year-old beef is, that's old beef, that is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's old beef.
I bet they still talk about it.
Yeah. They still talk about it, yes. But another thing, whoever does go down, whether it's City or Spurs, we don't know as yet.
Or Forest.
Or West Ham. We don't know yet, but it's going to be great watching it unfold. Coming back might be a bit easier next season. Might not be. I mean, they're still having the same number of teams coming back up. But you could finish as low as eighth in the Championship next season, a third of the way down the table, and still be in a playoff place. Terry, tell us all about this. Tell us what's happened here.
They're adding an extra couple of playoff spots. It's basically what's happening here.
Yes.
And it's mirroring the National League setup. So if you're finishing in the third and fourth place, you go through to the semi-final.
Yep.
Then it's the kind of a quarter-final going on between the final remaining four. So pretty straightforward. But that's what they're doing. They're extending the playoffs now. So that's what they're doing. And, you know, I think it's fairly obvious as to why they're doing that. It's more money. The last team to finish sixth in the playoff and get promoted was Blackpool in 2010. So to what extent it really makes a difference in terms of sporting, I don't know. It's one of these kind of things. If you're going to have playoffs, then I think you lean into them. And if you can keep interest going through to the end of the season,
yeah,
then I don't think it's a terrible idea. Obviously, there are additional concerns about scheduling and player welfare, and I appreciate that. But for the sake of, it's only going to amount to a couple of extra fixtures.
Yeah.
The biggest challenge is making certain that you can squeeze in that playoff fixture from the end of the regular season to the playoff final, which optimally is the final weekend of in May, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or maybe the weekend before. They try and do it for the bank holiday weekend, don't they? They don't always succeed, but they try to. So it feels to me like you're looking at Championship season now really regularly starting in late July rather than early August. In order to make that happen. So I'm finding it difficult to find reasons why this should be opposed.
Mm.
In fact, okay. I think it's actually quite a good idea.
Okay, then. Well, Jan, what about you? What do you think? I mean, for teams finishing third and fourth, the teams that have just missed out on going up automatically, it won't make any difference. There's not going to be an extra round for them. It's only going to be for the teams that finish fifth and sixth. Do you see a problem with it, apart from the extending the season thing?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that they're rewarded by going straight through to the semi-finals, and then the teams in fifth and sixth get to play their quarter-final one-legged playoff at home. So I think the teams have been rewarded and given a slight advantage based on merit. But just opening it up to eighth place, I don't, as Terry said, it's a couple of extra games. The run-in for the playoffs is incredibly exciting every single year. It's always brilliant. There tends to be that kind of set in the middle of the upper middle table in the championship where they're all kind of bunched together. So I think it'll make it even more exciting. I'm well up for it. It's not like they're reinventing the wheel here. They're just bolting a few more games on, and I think it will materially make the end of the season run-in much more exciting.
Yeah, it does actually add a little bit more jeopardy as well, because you've got the jeopardy of getting into either the third or fourth place just to try to get that. There's no taking your foot off if you've suddenly thought, oh, well, we're safely in the playoffs places now. Now you've got to think, well, actually, it's better if we try and maintain our position in the table. So I think that's actually a good thing. It's only in the Championship, though. They're not extending it down into League One, I think, at the moment. But
no,
I
that's
think,
true. It is just a Championship thing, Graham. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think if it works, then I can't see why they wouldn't do it. But again, it is scheduling. But is that right, though, Jan, that it's only going to be a single leg?
Yes.
The quarterfinals.
Yeah.
So it's really only one extra game, so half a week extension. So I'm sure they've got the capacity in the calendar there for that.
They'll work it out. It's interesting, though, because I think about last season and think about Sunderland's playoff run-in. Of course, Sunderland kind of knew they were in the playoffs for some time beforehand, and there was no jeopardy in that. And it is felt, I don't know if it's true, but it's felt that additional time that they had allowed them to prepare for the playoffs in a way that they wouldn't have under this new system. Now, again, there's a narrative that says this is the actually when a team finishes in the playoff spot too comfortably that it actually can affect their playoff because they've kind of like taken their foot off the gas, so to speak. So I don't know. It's all narrative. But I'm sure that this was something that I remember people sort of talking about Sunderland saying, oh, well, the thing about Sunderland is that you know, they've been in the playoff zone for so long now. There's been no peril towards the end of the season, that there's no urgency and that this might affect their mindset when they go into the playoffs, which of course turned out to be completely untrue. But yeah, it's an interesting, if that is true, then of course it just adds an extra bit of dynamic to the season and sort of makes you think about how things change. I don't think there's any doubt that it will change. And what's interesting, what I said earlier about like final playoff spot team normally doesn't go up, hasn't done in a very long time. It might be that you've got, let's say, for example, Southampton this season, who had a terrible, terrible start to the season under Will Still, have turned it around fairly slowly, actually, under Tonder Eckhart and kind of having their moments. Great cup win for them against Fulham, by the way. They might miss out this season on the playoffs because they've timed their run a little bit too late. There's still plenty there, but let's say that was to happen. But would they then actually be good enough if they missed out on the playoffs now? But then if they got into the quarterfinals in the new playoff structure, then you might see a team that would historically have finished outside the playoffs actually making a late surge. I think for the first few seasons, this could throw up a few chaotic results. Because I think back in the day, the playoffs used to be tremendous fun. They're still fun. But they used to be quite chaotic and you would get unexpected results. But nowadays, you find that it's not altogether unexpected. I don't think very many people would have argued that Sunderland, they might not have been the best team in that playoffs, but they were certainly capable and worthy winners of the playoffs. So you might get that while we have this period of readjustment and see some unexpected, you know, teams getting promoted by mistake. Which is, you know, one of the great things about the playoffs is that teams get promoted by accident sometimes, every now and then.
I look at the table right now and I'm thinking about how things would be different if this eighth place playoff position was available. And I'm looking at teams like Norwich, who are on a bit of a tear at the moment, but are 12 points short of the playoffs at the moment. That's really too much with, what, 10, 11 games to go. But the 8 points between them and Southampton, that is pretty doable in 10 games, isn't it? Especially in the form that they're in. I thought they played really well against Leeds yesterday, but just fell short. And Leeds, who have been very good recently, even though they are also in the relegation mire. But I thought Norwich did reasonably well away there. Personally, I think it is a good thing, but I can understand that people's knee-jerk reaction might be, well, this is rubbish, because some people like to just say, oh, this is rubbish, because it's in them, isn't it?
And most of the time, Graham, it is rubbish, let's be honest.
Most of the time, it is rubbish.
Most of the time, these things are usually a terrible idea. Yeah. But on this occasion, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Talking about Southampton, they're playing Coventry this weekend, and it's going to be in the box set. Do you think Southampton are going to push forward? Do you think that Wrexham have anything to worry about in that sixth playoff place?
Well, I think they definitely do, because of what we've just talked about, the fact that it shakes itself up at the end of the season with the playoffs. But you quite rightly point out Southampton are on the right tear and so are Coventry. So, I mean, are they just going to cancel each other out? Southampton need the points more. So they have to go for it, really, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, that's on Saturday lunchtime. We've got a few games from the relegation battle as well this weekend. We've got West Ham hosting City, and we've got Tottenham going to Liverpool, Terry. I think that's one place you want to go if you want to change your fortunes, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think there are a few clubs more accommodating than Liverpool when it comes to like dramatically shifting the narrative and the prospects of a team that everyone wants to see fail. Yeah, well done in advance, Liverpool. Thanks for that.
And the relegation battle is tight in England. It's also tight in Germany as well. There's 1 point between, I think, three or four teams for that relegation playoff place, isn't there, Terry? And two of them are playing on Friday night, Mönchengladbach and St. Pauli. Is that going to be fun and games, or is that going to be two poor teams just in desperation?
Yeah, that could be a bit of an ugly one to watch. But I mean, all I would say to that is that St. Pauli have the essence of a team that knows what it wants to do and is just doesn't have the players to be able to do them. Mönchengladbach, on the other hand, are probably as close to where Tottenham are in terms of just like total chaos. Just the inability to play football at any kind of organised level. And so you might find that there's maybe quite a lot of chances created, but no one like able to find the back of the net due to just general incompetence. So it might be a game of hijinks, even if it's not necessarily a high scoring goal game. Although I'll say that now and it'll probably end 4-3 or something like that.
Well, if you want to see what games we pick and what we think is going to happen in those games, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe to our Substack. And it'll be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFillip, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Nice. I mean, that shouldn't really be allowed, but at the same time, I think it's great. Yeah.